So this is really exciting. I can remember one of the first stories I did about the Anderson Valley was for Decanter Magazine several years ago. And one reason why I was really excited to do this story was because I had tasted these wines from the Savoy Vineyard that had always just blown my socks off. And I was really curious about this vineyard, this place, because it didn't matter the producer. I was just, the name kept coming up over and over again when I would choose my favorite wine in a tasting. And so I was really excited to come up, and I got the number for Mr. Savoy, and I left a message, and I never heard anything back. And so, and many people told me, oh, you know, doesn't surprise me. So I only got my experience about the vineyard from talking to a few people who worked there. So now, after many years of waiting, I'll get to hear from the man himself. We're really lucky to have him, I guess, because I hear that you are a man of few words, so I hope you'll give us a lot today, as well as three winemakers who use his fruit. So we'll get a perspective from the grower and from the interpreters. We have Eric Sussman, who a lot of you know from Radio Coteau Wines, one of the great success stories of a small individual project that's made its way into the finest restaurants in the country and mailing lists. And we have Scott Shapley of Rustler. Oh, Shapley, sorry, Scott. Similar story. Rustler has been a great, great brand since it started, and then also Mike Sullivan from Bonovia, who winemaker for many, many years at a lot of great. I just know you from Hartford days, and anyway, so we're lucky. We have one microphone to share, so we will have to just make do with that and pass it around. I'm just really interested, first of all, in why this vineyard is so great, and I'm interested to hear from you guys. Maybe we'll get back and talk a little bit about how it got started, how it got planted, and some of your decisions in doing that. So, Scott, why don't you start off and talk a little bit about what you love about this vineyard?
Well, first of all, Rich, he's kind of made the vineyard and picked a terrific spot. One of the things I've found about Savoy is it's really the most complex site that I've worked with in the Rustler program, both because we've got a wide range of clones, but also just the amazing range of exposures, exposition to the sun. There are different blocks that ripen differently on different parts of each of that individual block, so sometimes we have to break those up into different picks. In 2006, which is the year that that we're pouring here of our Savoy, we actually had five different fermenters for, I think, eight different blocks that we picked from. So trying to keep all of that separate and trying to suss that out each year has been challenging and also a lot of fun, and it really allows us to express a wide range of different nuances from all of those different factors that come out in the vineyard.
Do you see a huge variations among all those, or is it pretty subtle?
I think overall it's not really huge variations. Things will ripen a little bit differently, and of course clonal differences make a difference too. But there is sort of an underlying quality. For us, I find that we get a lot more of the mushroomy, earthy side of Pinot from Savoy than we do just about anywhere else that we get, you know.
And just so that everyone, this of our lineup, this is which wine?
Number three.
This will be number three that we're tasting. And so now let's skip over Rich and let Mike talk a little bit about what your attraction to the vineyard has been.
Yeah, so I've been working with Rich's 128 property since 1998. And at that time I was looking at, had worked with a number of sites starting from south of Boonville up to north of Navarro, looking for a site that was really expressive of Anderson Valley, really trying to study typicity and site character. And Rich's property, one thing, you know, for me, it's, I think, you know, it was beautiful to taste the Navarro wines before this, because I think that they both Rich's site and those wines that we tried really echo the character of Anderson Valley, this beautiful Sous-Bois character that Scott was talking about a minute ago, the beautiful red fruit quality. And Rich's property, I would say, and it's because of a lot of hard work, it's the consistency of that site. You know, it just is amazingly consistent year after year. And it really holds true to character. You know, 06, we're tasting two pretty dramatic differences here, the two 06s, first and third, and an 07 in the middle. And, you know, you can see, even though vintages are quite different, that there's a lot of commonality. And I would agree with Scott that the 06 wine that I'm pouring, which is the first wine in the flight, does tend to be more of that kind of Sous-Bois, earth, forest, floor quality. And it had a, 06 had a very savory character. And, you know, there's amazing consistency, but within the Anderson Valley, or, you know, certainly Rich's site, I find that, you know, there's almost this alternate bearing kind of a quality. Some years are savory and some years are sweet. 06s were very savory, 07s are sweet, 08s were savory, 09s are sweet. And it's kind of gone, you know, flip-flopped every other year, where, you know, whether there's a cooler vintage and they show more of an acid-driven spine versus a warmer vintage where they show a little more, you know, suppleness.
That's interesting. I hear people talk about Burgundy as red fruit years and black fruit years, sort of, you know, and so it's interesting, those dichotomies. Eric, do you want to talk a little bit about your 07 and about why Savoy?
Yeah, I've been working with the Savoy fruit since 2002, and it's the first vintage of Rede Coteau, and I think one of the great things about the Savoy vineyard is that there's a lot of different clonal material to work with, and as both Mike and Scott mentioned, the detail to farming is really important, and both Rich and now Paul Arjuni are just doing a really great job helping us to dial in the fruit quality. And also what Mike says, you know, we do see a lot of vintage character from year to year, which I think is the exciting part of working with Savoy Vineyard, because for me, to capture the personality of not only the site, but the vintage, the wine has a personality unto itself. So yeah, I agree with that.
I think all these wines are lovely. One thing that really strikes me is the texture. And I think that there is almost a commonality even across vintages, as sort of a beautiful sort of tannic thickness, but it's sweet tannins, and, you know, and it just gives it this amazingly lacy texture across the tongue. And I think that's something that I respond to a lot in these wines. Yes, sir, question. Okay, so starting on the left, wine number one is the Benovia 06. Wine number two is Radio Coteau 07. And wine number three is the Rustler 06. Okay? And now I'd be really interested, since I never really got this before, to get the real story of the Savoy Vineyard. Can you, Rich, talk a little bit about when you came here? Did you come to plant a vineyard? Did you, or were you here and decided to do it?
No, I came in. I had to have passion for Pinot.
Uh-huh.
And my wife told me I couldn't raise sailboats anymore. I was gone 50 days that year.
Where did you come from? Where were you?
San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was in, and I was, so we decided to find a little spot. Of course, I got carried away. I wanted to put in a few plants, and I got to 10 acres. I have another
and the lower one, when
I planted the first 10 acres in 91, and then in 92, the financing, I put another 22. And back then, of course, there was an awful lot of Chardonnay in there, because all these people here weren't here then. And it was hard to sell Pinot. You know, it was just, I persisted in it and kept planting it, plus Jim was getting to clonal selection was very difficult. Still like them, what we call California heritage.
The heritage
genes.
Yeah.
Out here, it responds quite nicely. Sorry. It was similar to a Prosser clone in Chardonnay, which was a hot weather. I had that in Chardonnay here, and it is wonderful. It's wonderful.
When you so the first part of the vineyard came in 1985, or the first
vineyard. Yeah.
And you said you had a passion for Pinot. What in San Francisco racing sailboats? What were you drinking then that inspired you to plant your own vineyard?
I had a friend whose parents had a liquor store, an old-fashioned liquor store, and he got into the wine. I was already into it. We struck up, so I drank widely, but Pinot's where I became focused.
California's?
So. Not at that time.
No.
It was French. Burgundy, yeah. I mean, they were Hansel did a nice, very heavy, big-style Pinot, but it was very good, and I liked it. But
why did you choose the Anderson Valley?
Colder weather. Yeah.
And so had you done some research, on sites that you looked?
It was pretty informal, but, I go out there in the middle of summer and see what it was,
Yeah.
And this seemed to be, for some reason, we didn't want to be on the Sonoma coast, and I don't know why, but
Right. This
was a family getaway, so it was close enough, 2 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what started it. It really started as a hobby, but what's the difference between genius and stupidity? Well, genius has its limits.
Yeah.
I think some of us in the lying end of it, maybe on the other side.
Yeah.
But.
And so when you were when you got up here and you were starting to lay out that first site, what sort of decisions were you making? I'm sure you had a variety of properties that you could have looked at.
Yeah, I wanted elevation then. This piece fit as much for the personal use as for the wine, but that's at 1,600 plus feet. You get a fair lot more wind up there, which shuts the plants down. It has a longer finish when it's 40 degrees down here. When we're harvesting, it's 70 degrees up there.
Right.
So that changes the... and that's just for interest. That particular vineyard where Ted Lemon was making... what was called 1 acre out of there, which will be in production again this year.
When we see wines from Savoy, could it be from either of those sites?
No. We're always strictly kept. I had pulled it out a while back. Phloxra was.
Now
a lot of Chardonnay. The market was. Plus, that's not what I wanted to do.
So now the Savoy vineyard is the lower one.
Savoy Vineyard is the lower one. The other would be Savoy at Deer Meadows.
Okay.
And it'll have the Deer Meadows. There's several people in there will be producing vineyard designate this year. I've been waiting. It hadn't been old enough, so I've been selling the grapes to, whatever. This year they've been in there 6 years, I guess, most of them in the ground. They don't look it, but.
when did you first really discover that you had something?
Actually, when I mentioned Ted Lemon again, we were fighting the commodity market idea, and how do you establish a working relationship, which is really what is the key. It's not just the grower, obviously. There's both, and there's every interpretation, and that is a complex site. It varies, and it's a nightmare, actually. Clones here, clones there, logic would have, so you do it differently, but.
When those first, it was when some Ted Lemon wines started
I had made some myself, actually, and I had a pretty good idea well before then that with those particular clones up there, I had Badensville, the Romano Conti that used to be around here, and then Martini 15. And Martini 15 was a problem there because it waited another 2 weeks to ripen, but I made some that still holds up. I have one bottle left, and I can see this fruit, the structure, and then your tannic thing, and I hate to use that word or a descriptor, but a more feminine, lighter.
Yeah.
Though I made wines this year, and some other person has done it, and it's in Ted's, they're totally the opposite. They're more stronger, and I don't know why.
Yeah. I think in my mind, Savoy is more the style that you described
right.
Before. A little bit more feminine. I think personally more of that kind of that red fruit, soft red fruit.
Right.
Maybe I could get Eric to talk a little bit about, I mean, you work with a lot of vineyards. What constitutes a good relationship, I mean, a good working relationship between a winemaker such as yourself and a vineyard owner, and how is that kind of borne out with your work with Savoy?
You know, really good communication, a lot of vineyard visits to get out in the field, see how the vines are growing. You know, meeting with the grower and just trying to dial things in. You know, a lot of the stuff at Savoy is actually we're looking at on an block by block basis by the acre. So you know, it's a collaboration. The Savoy name is on the label, you know, and it's an expression of the site. So I think every winery has a different style, but you know, ultimately it's the raw materials that will make the wine. So getting together with the grower, making sure that, you know, whether it's canopy management, it could be pruning, it could be irrigation. And, you know, it's a work in progress, and you pretty much get one shot that year. And if it doesn't work, hopefully you learn something so next year you go back in and modify it. And having that relationship with a grower that's willing to, you know, adapt and change and just kind of working together to get those raw materials to a certain level.
When did you start making Savoy?
Savoy in 2002 is actually our first vintage.
And was that something that just fell in your lap, or was that something that you had to audition for?
Yeah, I was courting Rich, and it was a lot of visits and
flowers, was, chocolates.
No, flowers, just bottles of wine. But you know, when I first started Rito Coteau, it was kind of a scouting mission, you know. There's a lot of great sites in California, but there's not always fruit available. So someone had told me that, hey, there might be some fruit available, and I called Rich up and just started talking to him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe, Scott, you also make wine from a number of different vineyards. How long have you been doing Savoy?
I actually signed on with Ressler Cellars in 2006, so uh-huh. I finished off the 05s and made everything after that. But Ressler's worked with Savoy since 2001.
Okay, so a similar time frame. Yeah. Do you find that consistently in the several years that you've been doing that, that Savoy merits any sort of different protocol in the winery?
You know, for me, I really like to let the fruit express itself as much as possible, so I tried to make the wines relatively similarly across the board. I mean, in 07, we made 17 different Pinots, and a lot of those differences come from the vineyards themselves. That having been said, I think that I've enjoyed an amount of whole cluster on Savoy in particular, and I don't do that across the board in the rest of our vineyards, just because I also like whole berry fermentations without the whole cluster. I'm not kind of completely on the whole cluster bandwagon. So in 06, for instance, about half of the lots that went into this bottling were about 50% whole cluster, so it kind of cuts it down to 25%. I think for some reason it lends itself to that sort of profile, although on any given year I'll be looking at the stems and seeing what type of lignification we've got, if they taste horrible or if I need to extract it a little bit differently. But yeah, so as far as that goes, I mean, other than making hard choices as to when to pick or how to co-ferment different blocks so that I don't have eight different fermentations. We tend to use steel tanks from 3 to 5 tons, and so I'll sort of split things up individually that way. And so in any given year, the Martini may be on its own, or the Martini and Badensville may be together. Usually the Pomard 115 go together, but in the end, I still taste through all of the barrels to try to come up with a blend that sort of really says Savoy. It's not really a question of saying, oh, this barrel's bad or good. It's just like, no, these together make Savoy and taste that way. So.
When with your whole cluster in this, are you using, are you waiting for some sort of lignification, or are you just pretty happy to throw in this certain percentage of stems, no matter how they look?
I look at the fruit first, so I don't pick based on the lignification so much, but I'll take a look at the stems when they come in and decide if they're really, really offensive. But I've actually put some level of greenish stems, what most people would say aren't lignified at all, and they seem to be just fine. But they still, you still get a little bit more of that perfume quality, the structure, the, you know, the pH goes up and all sorts of stuff there. But I think it hasn't. We actually tend to pump over mostly and not do a whole lot of punch down. So if I feel that there's too much extraction coming around, then I'll back off on any midterm punch downs and that type of thing. So I sort of manage it that way.
Mike, do you do any whole cluster?
Yeah, interestingly enough, this 06, it's interesting to taste the first and third one together because often I'll do less than 5% whole cluster on that site. But in 06, because it was such a late year and it was so cold, there was enormous litigation, more than I'd ever seen at that site going back to 98. So we did use 25%. And it definitely, you know, it's interesting because a site that has a tendency to have some of that forest floor quality definitely accentuates some of that and gives it some additional volume. And the one thing I'll say about Rich from a grower relationship is that, you know, as a non-Anderson Valley-based producer, trust was a really big part of, you know, a grower relationship. And the relationship that I have with Rich is, you know, he would call, you know, the type of grower that would call September 1st and go, well, you know, things are a little late up here, and we see some variation. I went through, I hope it's okay, but I went through and I dropped, I did a second or third pass, and we dropped some additional fruit on this site. I hope that's okay, but, you know, I thought it was the best interest of the wine. And that, you know, that kind of relationship is something that's, you know, a commitment, not something that, you know, you can forge on paper or, you know.
Yeah, I was doing an article on a winery in Napa not too long ago, and I remember walking some of the vineyards with the managers, and they would tell me about working with growers, and they would come with, you know, with specific instructions for some of their growers. And, oh, no, the guy was his family. He was from a grower family, and he would say the winemakers would come with all these instructions, and then they'd drive off back to their winery, and the family would just start laughing, you know, because they had no plan on executing any of that. So it sounds like that's not a problem with Mr. Savoy. And I think that that some of that textural quality that I was responding to, I'm sure, is part of the whole cluster, because it's those extra array of tannins that I think come when they're good tannins from the stems. They can really just broaden out that that flavor. Do you work it all that way, Eric?
The whole cluster is a kind of a vintage by vintage basis, and the 07 here does not have any whole cluster, but from time to time we do use some.
Uh-huh. By the way, if there's questions out there, please. Wait. Okay. Can you guys... wine number 3, the alcohol on the label
is
14.
It may have been just below 14, but I was a little worried that it was going to drift over that magic taxation boundary of 14, so I've bumped it up to 14 and paid extra taxes on it.
He said that he normally likes to put the exact alcohol level for educational. And there should be some sort of symbol for winemakers who do that so that we know, you know. Like 14% really.
Yeah. I was like, no, really.
Mike, can you do you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're looking at different vintages here. I mean, we struggled in 06 to achieve, you know, 23.5, you know, 24 bricks. Where 2007 was certainly a slightly warmer year, and if we were tasting 07s across the board, we'd probably be looking at alcohols more in the mid 14 range.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, but for 06.
Oh, for 06, it was about, you know, it was 14.0.
14.
Honest.
Yeah, 14 honest.
Yeah, on our 07, it's the high 14s. I think it's 14.8. But you know, we don't. We basically pick the fruit. We're not watering back. We're not adding acid. It's naturally fermented, and it is what it is. So that's the vintage.
So that and you print it accurately.
Yeah.
So we should have two symbols: one 14 really, and then 14 it is what it is because we don't do anything. You know, And you know, I'm one who thinks that that alcohol in the wines is a significant question. We were talking about it at lunch, and not for me, for really any other reason, that I think that that the lower you can keep them, the better the wine usually tastes. Do you think that it's something with Savoy Vineyard? That do you feel like it's a good site, Mike, to kind of get a good balance there, or find phenolic ripeness and sugar ripeness at the same time, versus the vineyards you've worked with?
I think that each vintage brings its own challenges, and although because you know the season starts a little later compared to you know where I work, principally in the River Valley. The season starts later up here. Generally, all the you know kind of physiologic markers are later in the season, pushing harvest back some years. You know, late October. So you know it is you know every other vintage or every third vintage is it's a challenge to even achieve 14% alcohol.
And
there's a natural you know balance in the, it, kind of in that range.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that, Scott?
Yes. In 2006, we actually picked. Towards the end of October, it was more October 12th through the 24th, and that's later than any other year in the, since 05. I mean, even in 05, it's usually been sort of the 24th to the 29th of September that we've been picking our lots. So, but yeah, in 06, we just, you know, we waited as long as we could and pulled it off. And I think that the flavors, you know, sometimes Rich has to actually keep me down because I tend to like to pick a little earlier. And so to me, it starts to taste pretty good pretty early on. And said, well, I think we might want to wait a little longer for that. And I'd like to trust his opinion on that because he's, of course, part of the vineyard in many ways. So.
Well, that's and I wanted to actually lead right into that question for Rich, that your name is going on these bottles along with these the winemakers and the winery. How much concern do you have when you are working with winemakers and you see them taking your fruit and the because I mean the level that level of trust goes both ways, doesn't it?
But we've been working together for quite a while, so we have winemakers in there who are representative of what we feel that vineyard in this valley does. You know, it's there's other ways of doing. You know, some badly when you're in heavy hot weather. There's you know, it varies, but it varies here too. But I think you get those more feminine, with a little, you still get the earthy or more mushroom in here. But he's got that fruit that rides there, and it does vary. One of my growers, who I was a little shocked, but I don't argue with him. He knows a lot more than I do. He was taking some in at 22.5 last year, the Dijon, and then some of his other at.
Yeah.
A little over 23. But also it's clonal. Martini 15, that's where you do get some of the alcohol. You're not going to get it ripe. It's got to be a brick higher than, you know, Badensville or maybe even more on the 115s, depending on the temperatures. You have to sometimes have to water a bit because you'll get a heat spike at 22, and you'll have dehydration, you know, not ripeness at something you're at 24. And also, we have high acids here, and that mask your ripeness is hard sometimes to tell that.
When you're just tasting the grapes, right?
Yeah. Now I'm out there is the big issue why some of the winemakers will do it. I'm out there continually at that point in time. I'm tasting, walking around, checking bricks, checking. I do pHs. I don't do TAs anymore. It's too time consuming. The winemakers do that.
And I've talked to a few wine producers over the last year, maybe two, who, you know, breathlessly came up to me and told me, oh, I got Savoy fruit this year. When you are choosing people to receive your fruit, I mean, I asked Eric if there was an audition. Is there an audition process for winemakers? Do you sit down? Do you demand a taste of their wines?
Well, there's a name, but we now deal with on both the vineyards, but... We waited quite a long time till he got a little more established. We won't use the name, but he is doing it. And then I was putting in a lot of new winemakers up at the other vineyard, and that's meant to even go to a higher price point if possible. And, you know, yeah, I taste their wines. I like, say, John Raitek, who works for Capon. I know his stuff, you know. I've known him for 7 or 8 years. We've talked. We just didn't have anything for him. And then there's a couple of others. Orbrego, who's here. And, and I can be a little choosier than I was in 2000.
So do you ask them, you say, all right, let's talk. Why don't you come up? Bring a few bottles, and you sit down and you taste it.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I know what we've tasted it. See what their program is, the various, how they're handling it, how they're proactive, or, you know, what are they making, what do they want to do here. Mm-hmm. They want to tell me they want everything in at 25. Well, you've got to find a new room, another place, because it's not going to happen. It has happened, and it's not there now.
Mike, is it nerve-wracking to have those sorts of conversations with famous vineyard owners?
I think we have a famous winemaker here.
No, well, I don't know. I guess I was lucky enough to get in there before, you know, before the selection process. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, getting in the university before they got really selected. So I think I was an early entrant. So.
Or getting your Master of Wine degree.
Exactly, yeah. If you're one of the first Masters of Wine.
Yeah. Any questions right now? Any comments, or we'll just continue the discussion. Oh, over here, sure. Okay, let's go down the row with some wine specifics. He was curious, filtered, unfiltered, and your barrel regime.
Yeah, the 07 is unfined, unfiltered. It was in barrel for 17 months, and there's 50% new French oak.
So that's the Radio Coteau. That's the middle wine.
And the first wine, the Badovia, that also about 17 months, 17, 18 months, about 40% new.
For the Wrestler Savoy in 06, on any given year, I sort of decide whether I'm going to over-vintage or not. So this year I pre-vintaged it, so we bottled it in August, which would be about 11 months, 10, 11 months. It's about 40% new oak, and we've actually started to move towards cross-flow filtering quite a bit, which I think gives a real nice clarity to the wine.
Could you describe what that is?
It's sort of a gentle-ish process, and I'm not exactly sure I can technically describe it as well as anybody would want me to, but it's sort of a passive, well, it's not passive. It's a big machine that comes in, and you can run your wine through the machine without blasting it through sort of a membrane filter for sterility. Generally, I like to use it for cleanliness. Some people say you can sterile filter a wine that way, but that's not what I've done. But recently, we've actually done quite a few of our wines that way, just because it really has just cleaned things up. I like to have clear delineation of flavors, so it's been kind of nice, because we sit on lees pretty much the entire year. No finding them so far. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make the wine good. I like to do as little as possible, so my preference is to have Rich's fruit come in, and I just don't screw it up on the way to the bottle. But if something goes wrong, I want to be ready to take care of it.
Yeah. And then back to Eric. I wanted to just get a sense for you. Actually, I'd be interested for all of you, since you all make from many different vineyards. A little bit of also general talk about the Anderson Valley, and about where, from wines you've tasted or made, where kind of Savoy, what sort of sweet spot that occupies in your mind as far as kind of Anderson Valley vineyards.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that helps to define my experience in the Anderson Valley with the Savoy vineyard is that there's this, you know, noticeable diurnal shift. So we get some warm days and then really cool nights. So we get nice richness and ripeness in the wines, but we also retain the acidity. So as with, you know, Mike, I'm also down in the Russian River Valley, Sonoma Coast area. And some of the, you know, the Russian River Valley sites are similar, where the days can get warm and the nights can get cold. The soils are different up here. In 2007, you know, we're picking in October. The clonal selection also brings a lot of the personality to the wine. So as Rich said, you know, this Martini selection, I've actually come to really enjoy it because it's a little thicker skinned. One of the biggest challenges for me in California with the Pinot Noir is the is the ripeness levels and the thinner skin grapes that tend to dehydrate, so you're not getting this sugar accumulation by, you know, carbohydrates translocating through the grapevine, but more of loss of water through the berry. So the martini selection tends to stand up to the heat a little bit better, but, you know, we're also moving towards less leafing. But, you know, in terms of the Anderson Valley character, it's, I think vibrancy of fruit, you know, uh-huh. and structure.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah, I don't know. Rich's property on 128, I would kind of, it's the Goldilocks philosophy. You know, as you go south of Boonville, you know, the porridge is a little too warm. As you go north of Navarro, the porridge is a little too cold. You know, that sweet spot right near, just north of Philo, seems to really do well and is very, you know, that level of consistency because of the climate. You know, you're not so far north that you're getting, you know, bombarded by fog and, you know, extending the season out extremely. And, you know, in a warm year, southern Anderson Valley has additional challenges. So it's the Goldilocks spot.
Yeah. Did you know that, Rich? While the microphone's going past you, did you know that you had the Goldilocks spot?
I noticed the variations. I actually had some land many years ago down near Hanley, and you had to kind of grow the Chardonnay down there, and it just didn't ripen up very well. Pinot would be great. It is great down there. A little lower production, certainly a different style. And, but I knew the temperatures. I had been tracking them, and I decided I didn't want to be down there for whatever reason, but I didn't want to be growing down here at an opportunity at that time, and that came up, and I thought it worked out, you know, real fine. It's not an easy site when we're saying there's land, it changes all over the place.
What, is that what makes it most difficult? Is just the variations?
Yeah, we got, you know, the attention to detail is out there is fairly amazing. I have irrigation lines that are bypass, so I can irrigate this 100 feet that's in the middle. There just doesn't seem to get enough rain. I mean, water from the irrigation. You know, it's, and we got to turn them off. We go put them on, turn them off, and then one will irrigate upwards. And we're using, as Jim was talking about, pressure bonds primarily. I find it a great tool. And then we base any irrigation on that. We don't irrigate a lot. Everybody talks about dry farming, but that's kind of a gross generalization. But we work toward that. But we also have a rootstock called 5C, which you can't shut the water off on. It'll just collapse and won't come back.
Why did you choose that rootstock?
It was what was there. Everybody was. It's like what people put AXR in, you know. That's what they had. Uh-huh. I would have. We had some 1039, and I'm using 10114 now, which I think is, and some 420 too. Mm-hmm.
Great. And then let's hear Scott on the on Savoy vis-a-vis Anderson Valley and California Pinot regions.
Sure. And well, certainly one thing that I'd like to mention about what Rich was saying, the attention to detail and just that micromanagement of all of the little areas within the vineyard, I think that's where we get our consistency year after year from that vineyard because of that labor-intensive care for what's going on there. I'd say, you know, I think everybody's made great reference to, you know, the Anderson Valley, that sort of sweet spot area for uh-huh. Savoy. And I think that it pays off a lot because there are other regions. We work with fruit from as far south as Santa Rita Hills and Santa Barbara County and now even up into Oregon. And different spots are consistent as well. But, you know, Santa Rita Hills makes great fruit, but it's, you know, very, very different year after year. The fruit quality can be the same, but it's like we don't know if we're going to get like a half ton of fruits or 4 tons of fruit sometimes from a certain block. And you know, we've had heavier and lighter crops at Savoy, and we've had later and earlier picks. But it is pretty amazing. Even just going back through my notes with all the wines we make, it's hard to remember everything about every lot that we've done. But I was just looking through, and it's like, God, how did this get to be so consistent from 05, 06, 07? I mean, these are really different vintages. And a lot of the numbers, the science numbers and even the end numbers in the wine, without forcing it into, you know, forcing a square peg into a round hole, you come out with this great expression of vineyard that really is consistent. I mean, the 06 is different from the 07, and it's different from the 08, and I think the vintage, we talk a lot about vineyard expression and regional expression, and we don't often talk as much about vintage expression. People, I mean, maybe it's the Coca-Cola era, we all want it to be the same year after year, but I think having that common thread with the understanding that you've got a nice expression from different vintages and showing what Mother Nature gives is good, but I think that the vintage expression can be pretty subtle sometimes in the Savoy fruit, because it really does have a very strong voice as far as what it's showing off.
So. Well, and I think that's a mark of a great site, right? I mean, if when you're confident enough in the fruit that's coming off there and the wines that are being made, that you can say, I really want to express the vintage, because you know that you have an idea of what you're going to get. And I think everyone's probably searching for more of that in California. Questions, comments right now? Anyone? Since Steve Pitcher and I seem to be the only ones who maybe care about this, I want to ask Rich, how do the Savoy wines do in the bottle over time? I've never had the pleasure of tasting that many older ones.
Pretty well. The oldest that, other than that ones I made many, many years ago, which was bottled before Christmas as far as that goes, and didn't really have any oak on it, but the structure stayed in there over 20 years. But the oldest I had recently was 1 acre. Tendling is 1994. And obviously, like an older wine, it's changed. It has a slightly more gossamery almost. In point of fact, it was, you couldn't have told that between a French Burgundy and a Burgundy or a Pinot here. It was a remarkable wine. So they can hold up. And we tasted some 2000s from down here and up there recently, and they're very dynamic still. Yeah. And they got a lot more time. A lot of them, you know, the winemakers have to market, get the wines out, so they got to be accessible a little earlier than if you wanted to age a wine for 20 years. But who's doing that? You know, I mean, don't have a, who's got a cellar for that? You know?
Mike, you've been making these wines for a while. What's been your experience going back and tasting some of the older Savoys?
I think they age beautifully. I mean, I think you know, the Anderson Valley Pinot has the potential for aging, you know, because of its structure, because of, you know, the slightly higher acidity, tannins that, you know, depending on site and vintage, can be more or less aggressive. They really do have, you know, kind of a classic structure for aging, and they are gorgeous wines. You know, whether they begin to see their peak drinking at 3 years or 5 years or 7 years, you know, I think it's up to the individual consumer.
Yeah. Eric?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, since we've just started to pull some of the earlier vintages, you know, now it's, we've got a 6 year vertical that we can evaluate, and the O2s are holding up. So I've tasted some older wines that Rich has shared, and they're, you know, they hold up, and I think, you know, old wine is a beautiful thing. So
yeah. Good. Okay. And Scott, do you, I'm sure you've gone back and tasted some older.
Yes, I have. And I think our O2 is actually doing really nicely. Our O1, I think, might be on its last legs, but that was our first year working with it. So it held up very well until relatively recently, and there's not really any of it left. So it's just really our little library of tasting. I think that what happened there was we used a lot of whole cluster, and I think that the pH ended up being pretty high. So, you know, whatever the actual TA was or the acidity was, I think that there wasn't an awful lot of protection between the sulfur and the higher pH. But you know, it put off a good fight for a really long time, and we enjoyed it while it was around. So
yeah.
But otherwise, I think they do really nicely.
Questions, comments, anyone? We've only got a few minutes left. I thought while you're finishing up your wines, Rich, I'm kind of interested in, you know, you started 85, you planted more in 91, 92. You said you've made some changes. What do you envision as the future of your vineyard? Do you have more changes in mind? Are there things you would like to do differently?
You know, I might have gone to, instead of a 7x6 on that lower vineyard, I think 7x4, 7x5. I have 7x5 and 7x4 down there. And I think that might improve things, but it's a pretty marginal call. Yeah. And getting narrower than 7 feet, you're getting into some weird equipment. Go down to Brago and see it. I'm sure they'd be glad to. Looks like something out of Alien. So there's, you know, certainly, I probably would have put in even
a little more of the California sort of more historical clones, particularly they do heat spikes. They give an awful lot of middle and a, but you know, the vineyard I'm talking about at Deer Meadows, I replanted, it was on a 10 by 3.5 because nobody would let me do a 6 by 7 back then. As a consultant, so I went 3.5 and do a split trellis, still 7 feet. I redid, when I put it all back in the holes, I went, I ripped it all out again. Thanks. I ripped it all back out again and redid it. Just, that was the attention to some of the detail. And I put that in. I did put that in on 7 by 3.5 and some by 7 by 3 and 1 acre, 6 foot 8 inches by 3, just to be different.
Yeah. Well, and then lastly, and please, last opportunity for questions, comments. Since it's been 25 years since you decided to step back from sailboat racing and come up, how do you reflect on your decision to do that and to plant this vineyard? What's
Oh, I think it was a good thing. I sold bookstores in San Francisco, where my day job was. So I've been planning this as I got older, and that's what I do now. And it's good. I don't have to work all year. I come from an agricultural background, but they raise cows where I was brought up, and those are twice a day things, 360 degrees, and they get up and walk around. The plants are a much better situation. Plus, I love the product. You know.
So, altogether, it's been a worthwhile experiment. 25 years.
It's been a lot of work for a while, but yeah. Happy where it is. And,
excellent. Yeah. Well, I am too, and I'm sure all these guys are. And any winemakers with the last comment or
I just want to thank Rich and Paul Arzruni too for doing such a great job keeping this vineyard consistent year after year. Yeah, he's in the back there. He takes care of a lot of people's vineyards up here.
Paul did when I, that decanter story about the Anderson Valley, Paul called me back. Yeah.
I also wanted to thank the, is it DL Catering, I guess?
DL Catering.
DL Catering.
Correct.
I think that the wines were tasting really good with that pairing. It was just, I like mine better with the pairing personally. So.
Oh. Mike?
Just a thank you to Rich and Paul and, you know, the continued good working relationship that we forged over the last, you know, many years. Look forward to, you know, doing this in another 10 years.
Yeah. Thanks, Rich and Paul. It's been a great adventure. It's a great site, and I think it's a reference point for Anderson Valley.
Definitely, and thanks to all of you winemakers for coming and doing this. If there's no other questions, we will just take a few minutes to reset for the next panel in a few minutes. So don't get up.